All right, this is the Marysville Board of Education special meeting of Monday, May 2nd, 2001. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Mady.
Here.
Mrs. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Fraker.
Here.
Mr. Lassiter.
Here.
And Mr. Freudenberg is absent tonight. Okay, purpose of this meeting tonight is to discuss compensation. I think the discussions leading up to this, I guess, is more precipitated by probably the budget more than anything, but I think as you kind of look at the current legislation in place as well as newer legislation at sub-House Bill 153, I think it's pretty apparent that at some point in the near future, teacher performance and administrator performance are going to be linked to your compensation at some point. I mean, like I said, I was reading that, I don't know if you've seen the new sub-House Bill 153, they've obviously added a great deal of language dealing with teacher compensation as well as administrative compensation. I don't want to leave that out. They're both in there. So I think that's kind of where this discussion was leading to, as well as I think we wanted to get some information, maybe some ideas from some of our finance committee members. And so I guess I'm gonna kind of throw it down to your end to kind of get us going, since okay. This was...
Well, you know, I kept finding myself getting confused with the whole performance-based evaluation versus sustainability, which is something we talked about.
Sure.
I guess really what drove this is that our current salary structure creates a... I think even the House bill puts it as a net ever-ending increases of salaries that aren't constrained in any way by revenue or any other index at that such point. So I think we were saying, well, let's look at how in the future we can compensate our staff in a way that's provides more sustainability. And so I don't know how, I think maybe it might make sense to talk about some of the things that are in the House bill, some of the performance-based stuff, just so we understand the backdrop of that, you know, the merit-based stuff that's coming.
Sure.
But then I think at some point we need to get to, well, how do we...
I want to make a point real quick, and
sure.
When we talk about performance evaluation, I think we want to talk about, you know, what does that mean? What is the objective of performance based? Is it student achievement? Is it retention? Is it, you know, high quality teachers? You know, there has to be a singular focus to doing that. I mean, is it just budget based? You know what I mean? I mean, it's you know. We're leading from the top down. I mean, what direction are we going in?
Right.
I mean, if you're asking me, it's you didn't ask me, but
no,
I'll pretend that you did.
That's what we're here for, right? So to get ideas out. And
you know, I think, you know, our single focus ought to be on if we're paying for, I don't want to say it that way, but if we're compensating for performance, it should be based on student achievement.
Agreed. Yeah.
I mean, that should be where we're going.
And I think the new budget bill says it has a kind of, they talk about the Ohio Department of Education, or the superintendent of the Ohio Department of Education has to come up with some sort of framework for that by the end of the year.
Right, and we have to implement it by July.
Right, and we have to have it implemented by July.
Correct.
And I think it breaks it down, and they break it down into one aspect of it has to be student
2012.
Achievement.
2012.
What's that?
Yeah, 2012. That's
right,
because you said at the end of the year. That's why I want to make sure. I
apologize. Correct. The state superintendent said by December 31st, 2011,
right.
The framework has to be in place,
yep.
And then boards of education have to adopt that evaluation by July 1st of 2012.
Right. That's my understanding.
Right.
So I want to say the student academic growth piece of that is required to be 50%, because I think it's left up to the local district to take those factors. Student academic growth, some rating of the teachers in terms of highly effective, needs improvement, unsatisfactory, and I might be misunderstanding this, so, and then considering
high quality or high qualified,
right,
is part of that.
But the student achievement piece of it needs to be more than 50% of our weighted average in that evaluation, is my understanding of it. So I guess what I'm saying is
Oh, I thought it had to be. It had to be 50% of their evaluation, and then the district could do other things to fill that,
right.
whatever you wanted to do.
Okay. I thought there was other... I guess the point is that there's this framework that's coming that's going to be performance-based, and we're going to have to implement it by the end of it.
Right, and what they did was they took those lanes and they said, okay, instead of bachelor plus 30...
Masters,
whatever that is. You now have your resident, professional, senior, and lead professional licensures.
Right.
And so, I mean, they're pretty, and then they tell you have to have your min-max range inside of those. And then how you move around those ranges is really up to you. And so...
Up to the local district.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, I mean, at least some of the studies I've done, it would... Some of the more logical ways to go about that would be... Kind of a, like I want to say Denver, like the way Denver does it in their pro comp, is they say, okay, we've got these educational blocks, and it's based on your district. So your district comes up with some kind of professional development unit. You have to take that unit. You have to show how you implemented it in your classroom, write a review on it,
right.
And then have that reviewed by your principal, and then at that point, you can move up a step. And then on top of that, what they did on the other side was they said, okay, now for your variable type of incentive, what we're going to do is we're going to say, you're going to sit down and each teacher is going to look at the kids they have coming in, and with your administrative team, you're going to figure out where you expect those kids to be at the end of the year. And then based on that, you know, you may receive I don't want to call it a bonus, but
it's kind of
that's
like
what they call it.
A bonus, a salary increase. Right, but you roll back to that. I mean, you have to do that every year, so
right,
you roll back to that. And then the problem with the state part of it, though, is the state says, well, for the grades that are testing, the 3, 4, 5, those grades, you have to use that as your student data, and then everybody else has to use something else. It's that something else that the problem comes to be. And then it's also, you're going to have a problem with filling those positions that have the value-added data in there. Just because I think there's more weight on that data than there is on other stuff. So that's just kind of,
right.
We're just kind of throwing that out there. Oh, yeah, there's the data one right there.
That's what I was kind of looking at that. I guess just kind of how this would translate into a sustainable... a sustainable way of compensating. It looks like these pieces are, I want to say the ones that in that report that you sent us,
mm-hmm.
they were all based on some percentage of the index or something.
Correct.
Yeah. And I don't know if that does any better than what we have today. I mean, to do something that way. Because
well, it does if you're talking about student performance. If you're
right.
talking about budget-wise,
right.
it may not.
Right.
But if we're focusing on, I'm just...
On student performance, I agree 100%.
So if we're doing performance, then that's what it is. I mean,
right.
if that's what you want, then that's, you know, you want to retain the people that are,
yeah.
you know, that are performing. And, you know, they use an unfortunate term. What do they call it? I'm trying to remember what they call it in that study. But basically, you know, you look, you know, however many certain years you get, and if you're not making those every single year, you're going to... You know, some people are going to fall off,
right.
and then when you recruit new students or new teachers, they'll see what you're doing. You know, you're apt to get teachers that are going to be able to fit into that system because it's already there. That makes sense. I don't remember what they call that.
Yeah. I just really glanced through it mostly. But I guess the sustainability piece is the part where I feel like. You know, if you look at our current situation where we have revenues that are flat, okay, and we have a schedule in place that basically says you got to, I mean, you have to, if people put in the extra time or earn the extra degrees, then you got to pay them more. And
right.
I think that's what's created our situation unsustainable. And maybe it's because of how we awarded, I don't know. I don't know how we got there, but, I mean, if you look across the state, it's the same situation, right? You know, flat funding. And you know expenses keep going up.
Sure.
So the point is how do we have some you know like in the private sector if you know, you hand out bonuses and you have a bad year profit-wise, you say, hey, you know, this year we just, there are no bonuses. We don't have the
right
dollars. And I don't know how, if there's, how we come up with some sort of compensation structure that gives the administration that kind of flexibility so that we're not finding ourselves in crisis because revenues happen to be flat one year. And, you know, I have some ideas, but I'm kind of curious as to what other people's ideas might be.
Well, I mean, I love that. I mean, why don't you just start with yours, and we'll work our way around.
I guess my idea is that you would allocate a certain portion of the budget that would be kind of towards like these incentives, and that would be your sort of, I don't know, I'm not an accountant, so if I'm using the wrong terms.
We'll probably have one of those.
I know, so I'm kind of hoping there's some input that we can get from some people who do this for a living. But that compensation would be discretionary. That if we don't have the money to pay that, we don't have to. If those happen to be things we just don't pay out that year. And maybe that's not, I don't, that's just a thought, I guess.
Well, I think the one point that you were making is a big difference when in the private sector, it's allocating a bonus as opposed to a salary increase.
Right.
And so it's a one-time.
Yeah. And some of this would be, I'm saying, is that some of the, if everything I looked at, that it seemed to be some component of pay that was based on incentive.
Bonus plus salary increase.
Right.
Or difference.
And then the other idea I had, which seems to be more in lines with something, you know, at least the staff would be able to predict and count on, would be something where your index was based on something that was, I guess, a little bit more reflective of local income, local revenue, or I don't know. I don't know how that works. But like, for instance, the, I don't know.
Well, that study, some things were based upon bonuses.
Correct.
Some things were based upon salary increase.
Correct.
Because they had it divided out in, there were quite, what are the three different sections?
Right. Well, I'll tell you, the couple ones that I read about, not only those, but Wash U in Nevada and even the one in Minnesota that they put together. Basically, the tenets that they used were, you know, your performance evaluation, built your index. So, you know, if you're moving your evaluation, you're moving forward on your index. Your knowledge and skills, like I said, however you want to do that, all of them based that on local, you know, on your local district. You could go out, you could learn something, and you apply it to your classroom today. And you showed how you did it, and that counted as a, instead of a master's or a bachelor 120, it was something that was applicable now and you could use now. And that was based on your index. And then everything else was, you know, they call it responsibility pay, but if you took a leadership role or you decided to teach an AP class that was hard to do or some of those, that was a bonus. Your, what do they call that? Your national certification? You're board certified. Yeah. If you're one of those. Those are good for 5 years, right? Is that right? 10 years? Tenure.
There's also a master's.
So you get, so as long as that's good, then that bumps, it gives you a yearly bonus, and then when that runs out, yours runs out unless you reapply for it.
So, I mean, those are things that you have, I mean, people are doing the work, you got to pay them.
Exactly.
Yes.
So the issue comes to be, well, if we allocate, okay, we're going to allocate, I don't know, $100,000 for everybody if everybody reaches those within, and then at the end of the year they do it, and we don't have that money to pay it.
Right.
Are they going to do it next year?
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in that situation where you get to the end of the year and you've done stuff.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, sorry.
Right.
Well.
And it probably doesn't work very well for things like that, where if you're actually taking on an additional task.
Right.
But in terms of.
But that's what we want. I mean, that's the purpose of a performance pay. I think we want our teachers to do those extra things, to sit down and we have the core curriculum coming into place, and it's far more rigorous curriculum, and it's far more stuff that we're going to need. I mean, as far as that's what Carla tells me. The core curriculum. I mean, it's more vertical. I mean, you're going to need to know a deeper knowledge of your subject area instead of a wider breadth of it. Is that correct? So
So then maybe, again, these are just ideas. So I'm certain.
No. I'm not trying to shoot them down. I'm just trying to talk through those. Yep. And I will say, just so everybody's clear, I'm not a fan of the single salary schedule. I don't think that rewards innovation on the teacher side. I think it sets the focus on, hey, you've been here for. I mean, you made it this far, and I think I would rather reward our folks, our administrators, and our teachers for the work they're doing, and not just for surviving 25 years in the classroom. Because I'd make it about two, and I'd be done.
So maybe the other thought then is shifts more to more of a management thing in terms of when you look at, you have these peaks and these valleys in revenue over time because you have the years where property values and whatnot are favorable, and do we take more of a look at, and again, me not being a CPA, and I really love to get input from people who do this for a living. I don't know if there's anybody in the room, but I mean, you have to look at your staffing in terms of how people fall within your pay structure.
Sure.
You have to look at your normal attrition rates. You got to look at the fact that over time, your revenues are going to have the peaks and valleys, and you got to do a better job of not spending all the peaks and then finding yourself in crisis during the valleys. And, again, the private sector deals with this all the time. This seems to be an opportunity for us to learn from some of that. Am I wrong, but doesn't it seem like, when we have times like this for revenues, revenue's flat. In the private sector, revenue's flat. You're not necessarily in crisis mode. Right now, you look at across the state, I'm just looking at some of these diagrams. Like there's Marysville, where our expenses are going up and revenues.
Right.
Well, I would
I would argue that our unemployment rate isn't where it is because people weren't in panic mode.
What's that? I'm sorry.
I said I would argue that our employment rate is where it's at because, in fact, our private sector was in crisis mode.
Well, they the government was in crisis mode. But
well.
Anyways,
okay, well, they're not all unemployed government workers, so I'm just...
No. I wasn't talking about TARP and stuff like that.
Is this open to the public now?
This is open.
Absolutely.
For that
one.
Yeah.
Please.
One point that I would like to make, based on what you're saying, is the difficulty in drawing a parallel between schools and the public sector is that when they have a good year, that generally is reflected by higher profits, by more money available.
Yeah.
When a school has a good year, that is based upon performance, upon accomplishments of their students, graduation rate, nothing that brings in additional money.
Right.
So to try to continually draw a parallel, certainly there's lots of things that schools can learn from businesses, but to draw a parallel there is not a possible thing to do. The school's income is based upon the performance of the teachers or the students.
To understand.
We'll have to find some way to survive those peaks and valleys, something other than basing the salaries upon achievement, value add, or any of the other parameters you may establish.
No,
I agree. That's not going to fix the problem of the peaks and the valleys. They're two separate issues. The peaks and the valleys would have to come from knowledgeable, reasonable negotiations.
And that's what I was trying in the beginning, making the thing is merit-based pay and sustainable sustainability don't necessarily, I mean, it's not really necessarily the same conversation. It just happens to be because that we're happening to talk about at the same time because whatever we come up with, like when we first brought this up, we were dealing with just a normal salary schedule. We're like, how do we make a more sustainable salary schedule? And then House Senate Bill 5, and then the budget bill comes along, and it's like, well, how we even compensate staff is going to change. So it makes it that much more difficult to try to figure out how
it's to hard to for things. It's hard to forecast on
what's that?
It's hard to forecast. I would think it would be very difficult for Cindy to forecast for that, but yeah, she's going to have to.
And just going to your point, though, but being in the public sector and being, you know, serving a community that, you know, basically the revenue all comes from the private sector at some point, right? So, you know, when the economy's low, we can't expect that, you know, when people are in the private sector have flat wages or declining wages, we can't expect that that's not going to be somehow reflected in the public sector. And vice versa, when the private sector does have good times, that always seems to lead to better pay within the public sector. And that seems to be the, you know, we can't have it both ways, right? When the private sector is thriving and the economy, it does, and the economy as well, it always seems like the public sector, you know, salaries go up during those times. And then when the private sector is on a, you know, having a down time, then, you know, there needs to be a way of tying those together, I guess, if we're going to be sustainable. Otherwise, we're kind of at the mercy of opening up negotiations or putting, and that usually comes after we put a levy in the ballot and threaten cuts. So that just can't be the cycle that we have.
Well, unfortunately, we're not really in charge of a lot of our revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just not. I mean, that's it. I mean, I understand. I mean, I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong. I'm just saying if I were a business and I'm in control of all of my revenue, then I can be a lot more agile with what I want to do.
Right. But I mean, 3-4% fluctuations from year to year shouldn't cause a crisis.
Well, we have more kids to serve every year, too. I mean, if I were a business, I could say, well, I'm not gonna serve pancakes anymore because nobody buys pancakes and I don't, it's not a profit center for me. But in the district, we have to take all of our pancakes. And we have to make them and serve them, and everybody has to eat them. We don't have a choice. So I understand what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is, you know,
I guess my point is, do we have a problem that we feel like we can solve, or do we have a problem that we're saying we just know what we can solve?
No, I think we can solve it. We're not going to solve it. We have to solve it
collectively
this way.
Understood.
Not this way. So, and I'm just saying, if we're here for ideas to talk about scenarios where we can put it.
Trust me, I would love to get ideas from
well, I mean, it's open to anyone out there. I mean, I'm sure, you know, some of our finance committee members have some ideas. At least that was my understanding. So if they would like to share any of those now, it would be fantastic. You better hurry up. This meeting's going to be over.
And just to make a point on the finance committee, that, you know, the idea of getting the finance committee involved was to have focus on a regular basis like we have been to some of those other areas that we're focusing on.
Right.
So I'm comfortable talking with eyes beating on me and
thinking
out loud, knowing that it'll probably be used against me in district email and in the newspaper, but, I mean, I'm fine with that, but not everybody else is.
Please do.
Just on the not limited to the one statement, and I don't know how to think of something.
Speak up louder.
Yeah.
Speak
up louder so we can get you on tape.
Okay. Something that I'd like to bring up, simply because my work on the finance committee for the past almost year, I know that we've been very intentional in focusing our work and our conversations on the expenditure. We really have not jumped into the funding part of the equation. And I know that 3 years ago, when I first basically be calls for the funding equation to be adjusted so that people were not contributing those excess dollars into the district. So I think it, when we look at sustainability, we have to look at the fact that the funding model in the state is not sustainable.
That's absolutely true.
Are you referring to the fact that when property values go up, that that doesn't
their revenue doesn't go
right
up?
Is that what you're referring to? Are you referring to when local residents make, you know, more income comes into the community? That, I mean, are you referring to income or property values?
Our funding comes from property.
Understood. I understand. I just want to make sure that's what you were
sure.
referring to.
No, I mean, I was trying to dovetail.
Because those aren't always the same, right?
No, I was trying to dovetail your conversation about wouldn't it be great if, you know, we had extra dollars because everything was coming and then we could make these decisions based on that and pay out, you know, any type of performance incentives. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think it's realistic to ever see us having a surplus of dollars. Be doing things. How are we going to generate a surplus of dollars in the district? I'm not trying to ask an ignorant rhetorical question, Doug, but I'm just saying.
So what has happened then during those years when we have had higher property values in the local community? What's happened in those years?
We
have not sought additional revenue at the ballot. We didn't need to. Because of property dollars and the increase in value of things that were collected through PPP funded the additional increases, cost of living, inflation, what have you, for operations within the district. That's been going on for 30, 40 years.
I'm not following, sorry. I'd have to see what you're talking about.
Okay.
Property values, if they go up, your millage is going to go down.
I understand that.
Increase,
but
that
I should have said growth in the area. And
again,
I'm just speaking
growth,
off the top
though.
Of my head, so I feel very uncomfortable about that just because I don't have the numbers in front of me. But
well, there's you don't need any numbers. There's no growth. If you have property value increase, your millage has to go down
right.
so that you cannot collect any more than what that levy brought in at that time.
Sure.
So there's no way that there could be extra growth, only in inside millage.
No, if you have additional properties in the community.
No, you get no extra money. You get the same amount of money. The only time that you have growth is inside millage, which is 4.6 mils for our district.
That's
the only increase that
until,
we get.
Until you renew the levy.
Replace a levy or put a new levy on. That's the only time
so
you can get
growth.
So if
we put a whole new housing division in here, you're saying we don't get any additional revenue from that?
No, only on inside millage. The first year on new when they put the new house in, and then after that it goes back down into it. So new construction for 1 year, and then after that it's back into the remainder of the millage, remainder of the valuation.
So a levy that was meant to collect $1 million
brings
in
$1 million.
Will always
even
collect.
Even when you have new homes in the area.
Unless the first year of the new construction, yes, absolutely.
And if you're at where we're at now, where property values
are
dropping, we'll actually bring in less.
But
yeah.
That is not at all the way I understood it. So I understood the effective millage. I understand what you're saying there, but I did not understand. I did not. And I was very confident up until this point, so fairly confident that when you have a new home that moves into the district, that you get additional revenues for that new home.
1 year.
Just 1 year, you're saying.
Plus, what happens is that new property, let's say it's a $100,000 property.
Right.
Taxable at 35%, so $35,000 taxable. Of that hits the tax duplicate. 22 mils is your charge off,
right,
for your state foundation. Our effective millage is 27. So you have 5 mils on that property at 30, you know, whatever that rate is. So 5 mils generates about $40 $100,000. So, I mean, even if no kid came out of that house, you're not going to get excess a lot of excess dollars.
That's all I was speaking to, is that you do get excess dollars.
Well, yeah, but if you would have to have your millage a lot higher, because five mills at $100,000 each,
sure,
you're going to get basically, I think it's around $40 a mill for $100,000. So you got to get maybe $200
for one
max
year.
for that property.
For the,
I mean,
first year?
Basically, that's what you're getting. You know, if you're getting a kid out of that house.
For one year.
For the first year.
If you're getting a kid out of that house, you're not, you can't, that's not sustainable.
Just for the first year, you're only getting money.
Even if it lasts forever.
Okay.
If that's $200 you get for that house, how do you sustain that?
I don't know.
That's our problem. Our problem has been growth, because residential property has far exceeded any other type of property that we had, and 30% of the property that we once had is gone. You know, this district, when the high school was built in 1990, 70% of that at that point got paid for with commercial tax. We've reversed. Now we're the opposite of that. Residential is picking up so much more of that, and residential doesn't pay for itself. Flat out doesn't pay for itself. Non-sustainable. And that's the reason why in Ohio you have a levy cycle. It's every 2 to 3 years, 4 years max. Every school district, just march them out.
So just out of curiosity, with all the new developments that are in TIPS, have we received more or less money because of the TIF agreements?
TIF agreements are outside of that funding, they're separated out. They're not subtracted away from that 22 mil charge-off. So you take that value, put it outside of that, and then we get a certain percentage of full tax that comes out of that, because the state doesn't recognize that TIF district as value. So you don't lose the 22 mills off of those properties. So you gain the full millage off of those properties, and then we tax share that with the city. So the advantage really is to the city.
Correct.
We agreed to that to kind of hold even. We didn't want to lose what we would have received from the funding, but at least all those dollars remained locally. The state didn't take 22 mills of all that value in those areas and move it someplace else. All that value stayed in Marysville. That's an advantage of a TIF district. And you can also, you can fund the infrastructure and those kinds of things through the profits coming out of that, because of the way the school funding formula works. It's the only reason TIFs work. It's the only reason. Because you don't lose the first 22 mils of value.
And they've changed that law too.
Yeah, that's tightened way up.
And so once now another TIF district would go in, we would lose that extra value. We would have to pay that extra value.
They saw that, didn't they?
Yes.
Sneaky.
Well, yeah, and again, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. The advantages of a TIF district, though, besides keeping your money locally, is that you can build out the infrastructure immediately through those self-fundings, and then hopefully build those TIF districts out faster. That's what you're gaining. That's what you're hoping for.
Okay.
If I may, I'd like to finish the thought I had.
Sure.
Really, I'm trying to help.
No, I think it's fine. It's an idea, and that's what we're here for, right?
The key, and we do use the word sustainability quite frequently these days in the media, so I applaud that. The key is, if you turn back the clock to 6-7 years ago, what we had in Marysville appeared to be very sustainable. Okay? It was sustainable in that if we voted for a levy that was going to collect, say, $2 million annually from the community, it was only going to collect $2 million annually, and that levy would collect were not tethered to the restrictions that real estate taxes were allowed to increase. It was simply a function of what we had in inventory and equipment among the business community in the district. And that tended to go up because when we were initially talking, in good times, there's more inventory, more equipment, more profit. The value of what was there went up year after year after year, and those additional dollars that were placed in the inventory and equipment gave us the extra dollars year after year after year to adjust to what we needed expenditure-wise in our budget. We need additional money for compensation? Great. There are more dollars from PPP than there were last year. We need to do this in this building? Great. We've got more dollars from PPP next year than we had this year. That, again, was sustainable. 30, 40 years. Those two prongs together, the way we handle the real estate property and the way we handle the PPP, were very sustainable in Marysville, and that's why we were able to do so much with so little tax burden within the community. That all got changed in 2005, and that's why what we're looking at right now in the way of the funding model today, I mean, I'm not even talking about what's happening at the State House, just what's been handed to us in terms of how we're going to do business in the district going forward is not sustainable. You cannot manage a district when there is no growth in revenue.
So what can we do? I mean, just I think we all understand the TPP aspect of it, but what, I mean, are we talking like income tax, or are you talking some sort of property tax that grows as property values grow? Or
I don't know what to do. If I did, I'd suggest it.
I mean, the other alternative is we get on a better or faster levy cycle, right? I mean, like the other districts.
A couple observations I would make. Number one, we still got the opportunity to try to get some of the PPP replacement dollars maintained
right,
for the long term. If we are not devoting our fullest effort to that, we are hurting this district perpetually. Because we're looking at, what, $12 million there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's $12 million. We either kiss it goodbye or we try to save it.
Well, we have to replace it somehow.
Well, the only way I think we're going to be able to replace it is going to be with
I'm just saying.
Real estate taxes, income taxes,
exactly.
Or a combination thereof.
Right, I'm just saying that you have your three options.
It's that doggone simple. We got to fund the schools.
I mean, Marysville has been very blessed in our situation from a levy point of view. But if you look at the districts that we're trying to keep up with, if you look at Worthington, you look at Hilliard, you look at those districts, and you look at their levy cycles, we can't keep up with that. And if you look at Hilliard, they're on the ballot in May, and even if they pass it, they're in deficit spending. Even if that levy passes, that is unsustainable. And something needs to be done there. And it can't just always mean more bigger levies and more often. And so that's the point of the discussion. I'm not trying to say that, you know, there's some silver bullet solution that I have in my back pocket that you guys just need to come along on. I don't know what the solution is. And I'm sorry if I'm a little standoffish when it comes to, you know, looking at the levy situation and saying we just need to, you know, tax more. Because I see where that leads. You just look across the state. It's not a good place.
That on the long term, I would never advocate for more tax to solve any problem. However, in the short term, I would say when we're looking at the cuts that we were discussing at last work session, and we're starting the discussion right now about what we can do with salaries, because again, they're 85% of our budget. We know this. The one thing I will say, if the board has not studied what the Tuff Report has been saying for years about the local tax effort in this community, maybe the board should look at that number before we start dismantling everything we're doing.
I think we need to get back to ideas, because I'm more apt to say I don't want to try to keep up with the Joneses. I don't want to try to keep up with the Hilliards and the Mayor and the Worthingtons. And I don't want to try to keep up with them and end up on the same levy cycles they're on. I want to come up with creative solutions to provide sustainability to the district. And if that's a different type of levy, let's talk about it. But if this, to me, I think it's a compensation issue. I think we need to find a more sustainable way of compensating, because I look at, like, again, I look at all these different districts. It doesn't matter which one you look at in the state. Compensation's going up.
Actually, I think our compensation's gone down, hasn't it?
What's that?
Yes, it has.
I believe our compensation, given we have fewer employees now than we did, I mean, our level of compensation had to have gone down.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about fewer employees. Yeah.
I'm just saying our level of compensation has gone down. I mean, we had a buyout 2 years ago, and we had another one this year, so we're paying less. Our salary structure hasn't changed.
I get it.
At some point, we're going to catch back up to it.
Exactly.
I know what you're saying. We're going to catch back up to it. So I guess if you want to do a comp, and then we'll go back to our original of what we're compensating for. I think the discussion should be, what are we paying for? It's a sustainability. You're never going to be if you're going to continue to have employees. We're going to continue to want to move forward in their lives like you and I do in the private sector. We are going to have to compensate them.
Agreed.
Okay, we have to. I mean, I don't know.
No,
that's our job as an employer.
Yeah.
So we are never going to be sustainable because we can't, unless we can get them out to mow lawns during the summer to help pay for our general funds. So I'm not seeing a lot of hands raising out there. So what I think we should be thinking about is, look, we can have a structure, and it's kind of laid out in there, and we have our min-match ranges. You know, there's always an option to say, okay, look, we look at our budget for next year. This is how much room we have in those ranges to move around.
Yeah.
Okay, and that gives you some room, and it gives you some working room, but at some point, your expectation is you want everybody to meet their goals.
Right.
You do. Because that's our business. We want those kids to reach their full potential as quickly as possible, and that's the point of doing a merit-based system. So at some point, you're going to reach the end, and you're going to have to either find another way to have revenues, or you're going to have to cut back on what you do, unless I'm missing something. And I may be.
No.
I don't know how you sustain something when you have no control over your revenue. We ask these, if we're going to ask them to do more in the private sector. When I'm in sales, I get a bonus. It's paid for because of the extra sales I do.
I don't get paid more for doing more, so it doesn't. That's not always the case.
Well, I'm saying, but are you on an incentive program?
No, I'm not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, we're talking about an incentive-based program. Now,
keeping all of our clients happy, I guess that's incentive.
That is incentive,
maintaining,
right?
Maintaining our client base, that's a pretty good incentive.
That's what we're doing. I get it. So I mean, maybe I'm somewhere else. I just can't get my hands around saying we can be sustainable with what we have forever.
No, and I don't say forever. And I understand at some point there may be a need to ask for more revenue too, and I understand that. And I would like to have that be more structured in the sense that, listen, in order for us to pay our employees what they deserve to be paid, this is what this levy's for. It's for that purpose. It's not for maintaining extracurriculars. It's not for preserving the arts program. It's for, you know, I would love for it to be more along those lines. I mean, that's...
Well, again, I think that's what a performance... You can look down, you can look at your performance base and say, look, we paid out this because this was the goal that they set out and this was the goal they reached. These kids met this criteria and they moved on. And you do it at an individual level.
Right.
You do it at maybe a group level. And then maybe at a school level, you can mix and match however you want. But I think it's the accountability part when you have to go and ask for more revenues. Look, we're basing this on performance. We're not basing it just because, you know, you made it 25 years. You know what I mean? Or you're here for another year. This is what we're paying for.
Yeah.
Now, I don't necessarily think that program is going to be cheaper than what we have now, but it's certainly more accountable to what we're doing. Now, I don't know how else to...
That was
going to
be my question. How is that system going to be any more affordable? Because, in fact, your teacher's rise to the occasion, which, as a parent, my experience with very poor teachers is that they would.
Yeah, I know.
They're going to rise to the occasion. They're going to do the modules necessarily. But if a particular master teacher portfolio becomes senior professional instructors, they're going to continue as is to accomplish as much as possible, but we're going to hit the high end of the range.
Absolutely
and
correct.
The only way that a change in salary set was going to save money is if we hire unmotivated poor teachers or if we ask them to be paid less.
Well,
and everywhere again, we keep equating it to the private sector. In the private sector, there's no apologies being made right now by oil companies for taking profits. That's their job, is to make money, to make a profit. That's our system. But in the public sector, we're not to do that. So I'm not sure how the system is going to, I'm not saying it's a bad system.
Well, I'm just going to.
I think we have two separate issues.
I'm just going to tell you right now, we're going to get to that system. Whether the federal government's going to get us there or the state's going to get us there, but we're going to be there sooner than you think. So either we figure it out now or we don't.
I'm just saying that's not going to inherently save us money.
I didn't say it was, I was trying to get there.
Do when everybody steps up.
Right.
And you have this, everybody gets to the top of the range, which again, my experience for
and
18 years with Marysville schools is that what's going to
happen. Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't see, maybe I'm being naive and Pollyanna, but a little bit, but I don't see this as being a big issue. I think our staff, I think you can transition to this. I think they're very interested in performance evaluation and an index built around that. Mm-hmm. I really do. Now, I think you have some challenges because you have many staff members that I'm not sure how you judge because they don't necessarily move kids. What do you do with guidance counselors or psychologists or special ed teachers? Those, I mean, there are some, or even teachers that fall outside of the testing areas. You know, you're going to have to create some stuff. Inside, that's a scientific term, but you're going to have to. But I don't see that, knowing the staff, I think I know our staff, I don't see that as a big issue. I really don't. I think there are some challenges. I think we can move there without much. The issue that I struggle with, really, is how once that's there, how do you feed it? That's the issue. Because when I look back, you know, if our effective rate is 27 mils, in 1968, our millage was 18.6 mils. Now we're not in six, we gained about 8 mils. We're in 2011. In effective millage, we've gained 8 mils. Now, we've more than doubled. We're serving a lot more kids. In 1968, or 1972, when I came here, we had 2 special education teachers. 2. They were housed someplace else. Or they weren't at school. Or they didn't live to get to school age. Our challenges are different, and we're really, our effective millage rate that we're charging our community is really not increased very much. I mean, House Bill 920, when it went into effect in 1977, works. It really throttles you, and it makes you go in a levy cycle. So probably what we need to do is once you have this developed, you have to go over here and develop another. Which is, how are you going to sustain this with a forecast of this? Knowing that every 2 years the state's going to come in with their budget and borrow money from us, like they're doing and have done for the last 3 budgets. They didn't have a habit of doing that, but right now they're in our pocket a lot. So there are some assumptions you'd have to build in order to build this over here to sustain this. But I think it's I think both are doable because I understand what you're saying, but I also understand the need of the marketplace. We have to compete. I disagree with you when you say we can't look at Hilliard and Devlin and those. Not, I don't want, we have never competed with them dollar for dollar, ever, ever, ever.
We never could.
But it, you can't. But you have to be.
I have to make a point on that, though. I was not referring to competing with them from an academic point of view. I was saying they're
from
headed
a levy
off a cliff,
standpoint.
And I don't want to be falling
off.
Yeah,
no, financially.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
let me tell you, you know, I've done a bunch of levies. And if I never have to do another levy, I will be one happy guy. Because levies are difficult. I mean, you bleed real blood when you're out there. My family bleeds real blood when I'm out there. It's not fun. It just isn't. I mean, you get punished.
Well, it takes
and I don't
time
want to.
Everything.
I don't want to do that. I mean, it. I would do anything not to be in a levy campaign. I mean, it's just a lot of energy, a lot of time, and you just it. But it, I would say, you know, this creating these things, it's going to take some time, but I think we realize what's there. We may be a little ahead of the ball because we don't know the true definitions of all this.
Right.
It hasn't worked through all the legislation and those kinds of things. But we know it's coming, and I think we can probably get there. I don't know if there's
I got to tell you, there's some, but not very much. But I think the feeling, at least from the discussions, is that's where we would like to go. Performance is a performance.
I get
the feeling that the folks in the MEA would like to get. I'm hoping would like to get there as well. There's going to be issues not only with setting up a structure, but management wise. I mean, how are you? There's some of that. How are you going to develop those evaluations, and where's that data going to come from?
We're moving. We've been part of the process. It's part of Race to the Top.
It's a huge part of the
Absolutely. Principal evaluation
Absolutely.
Model that we've been working in the last couple of years. It's all those kinds of things. We're already ahead of the game along those lines. That's the reason why I say I think as a staff we're closer than what any of us probably give ourselves credit for. But the other parts of that is that I know that you're going to get here better if you better understand some of this stuff over here. Because how do you give a merit if there's nothing in the bucket?
It'll never work. A merit system won't work if you don't have something to. If you're going to promise something, you got to keep your promise. Otherwise, it's not.
And I think that's the fear. The fear is that you're going to go to these kind of things, and there needs to be. There needs to be some kind of acknowledgement that.
But it's the same way now for the salary schedule, though, right? I mean, we can't give a step increase if there's no money in the forecast.
Correct.
And so
we can't sign for it.
That's not a different challenge. It's the same challenge we have. It's just we're paying it differently.
I will say this though: when we were talking about sustainability and we had a salary schedule, it was a lot easier to play with the numbers.
There's no question. It's very easy to manage a salary schedule.
Yeah, because that's
so you
when we
back
started
to
this. It was like, well, yeah, I don't know. At least from a financial point of view, it'd been a little easier to kind of. So we talked about starting to hire salaries and flattening it out, because the part becomes because we find ourselves in the buyout cycle, and that's where this whole conversation started out. And so there's extra cost there to try to readjust our.
But a lot of that's going to be driven by the market.
Well, yeah, I'm saying now it's a little bit more complicated.
But even as I look, like I said, if I look at that House Bill 153, you're still going to get, if you have a good evaluation, that is based on, you get an increase, you're basing your increase on
right.
it. So you still have a step schedule. If you make your evaluation. Now, obviously, if you don't make your evaluation, you're not going to get an increase.
Right.
But you're still going to have that. It's just now there's a little bit more variables on there.
Yeah. And I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's vapor first. But, I mean, that's the idea behind it. So
it's based on performance as opposed to time.
Correct. And student achievement is what it's based on. Education, student,
yeah,
license.
Oh, I'm sorry.
not sure there was ever much fat there to begin with, because we've never spent to the level where we could have. And primarily because how fast, I mean, we've grown. You know, and you have to have tables and chairs for that. But as far as utilities, we spend at least 35% less than other folks do. I think we've.
I mean, we're every one of our buildings are Energy Star compliant.
Why do we have two empty buildings? What are we doing
with those? Well, the one is going to be rented, but the other we built.
It's been years.
And again, it takes a while to do those kinds of things. But can I go back and give you a history lesson on why those were built? I mean, basically, when we talk about tangible personal property. When this district lost tangible property in 2005, we saw ourselves needing to pass a bond issue to pay not only pay for the past, for the debt of past buildings, because we built our buildings on growth. We kept our millage rate at 3.7 mils for bonds, and as the district grew, we asked the voters to increase that 3.7 times the new taxable property out there. So that 3.7 mils times a new whatever it is, I forget what it's called math-wise, but it created new, more money. So, and that built our buildings. But when the tangible property, we lost 30% of all of our property in this district. We couldn't do that anymore. So the state said, if you have, and we knew we were going to have to build another middle school in order to sustain the growth. In 2005, we were growing fast. We planned this building and got $27 million of one-time money from the state in order to build this building and add on to the high school and so on, because we were going to have to, we were facing the state was going to raise our bond rate anyway and force some extra bonds on this community. So we decided to ask the community for $1 million and fund these buildings. And then when we did that, we got $27 million of one-time money, and then the recession occurred. Our growth slowed down. Our growth slowed down ahead of projections. So if we didn't have this building, we would need something anyway, because the old middle school couldn't hold student population in this building.
I understand that.
It just couldn't do it. So we will grow back into the middle school faster. To be very honest, I'd rather keep that building closed a little bit longer, because
so
it's going to.
Rent it out anytime?
It wouldn't. We use that building, the middle school. East, we're in the works of doing that, of renting it out. But even if you spend $60,000 to keep those buildings up per year, and that's rough numbers. It goes a long way towards that $27 million that we got of one-time money to add on to high school, which we needed, to add on to this building to make it bigger to house our entire middle school population, even if we have to keep those buildings closed a tad longer. So I don't know whether, I probably more a lot more explanation than probably what you wanted there, but that's the reason why we did it. Now, do I wish those buildings were full? Sort of.
No, I'm not saying full.
Well, but even if they were running, we would be in here and having spent a lot more money, because you have to house, you have to put people, staff in those buildings.
No, I understand that. I'm saying using the resources you have, you don't need to school.
Yeah. Well, that's what we tried to do with primarily East. The middle school, we rent it out. But we have staff in that building. That's where our technology staff is.
But you feel comfortable with all of the other areas that we're just spending the minimum.
We're down. We're at 40. We were at 40 bus routes we're going to go to 33 next year. We're at 34 right now. And moving basically the same number of kids we did with 40. That's honed down. There will be some that say that's honed down too much. Coaching, those kinds of things, coaches, our coaches and our activity directors haven't had a raise since 2007. Yes, the answer to your question, I think we have. We're still going to have to look for some additional ways to save money. We've saved computer-wise and so on. I mean, we went with a mass bid, brought in Fairbanks and North Union, and did a countywide bid for all of our computers. Because of the numbers, you save some dollars there. So I think we've done a nice job there. But primarily, what you're looking at your big numbers. You're looking at your health insurance. Our health insurance is the lowest any place around, even including the industries. Our health insurance rate is the lowest.
Now, give me a crash course. Who's paying the health insurance?
We pay some, employees pay some.
Can you throw out the percentage one?
Our employees pay 20% of one plan, 10% of another. And a little, I don't know, it's about 2% of the other, but that's a high deductible plan where they have $6,000 deductible in that plan. But cost-wise to the district, I can throw percentages at you all day. I mean, I could say that's 20% of this, but give me a plan that costs the least, and that's, we've done a good service not only to our employees, but also to the community. Because there's industry in this area that charges no premium to their employees. None. And their plans are still higher than theirs. So I think we've done a good job of managing those. Our utility costs would be the next big area that you have to look at. We've done an excellent job of managing that. And then transportation is the other big nugget in there, and we keep ratcheting those down. Fuel prices are going to be a challenge there for us. And again, I don't think we can run it less than 33 buses, not 148 square miles, not moving the number of kids we have to move. We may be able to go to 32, but it'll be a challenge. We're at 33 right now. Our custodians clean 32,000 square foot per person. That's way above industry standard. I think we've done a good job. I really do. Especially when I go out and look at, other comparisons. The issue always becomes, you can always cut, especially in an area where folks don't use. If I never had transportation in the house where I lived. Transportation we could cut, I suppose. I mean, a lot of people look at it that way. If I'm not using athletics, cut sports.
I mean, it is a good question just because, I was at the OSBA thing this weekend, and I'm not saying that we would find any big savings there, but there was one session I went to where they talked about benchmarking. And just to give districts an idea, not saying this is where you should be, but let's look at these districts that seem to do better in these non-instructional areas. What practices are they doing? Is there any opportunity for improvement?
Absolutely.
So it is a good question.
I agree. I think we've done that, though, too. I think we've benchmarked with folks.
Can I say something to that? Last August, I was asked to sit on the Finance Committee, and one of my big gripes is, what about facilities and the buildings and things to take care of? Because my job, I work in a facilities department. And when I come in, I started looking at the numbers. I was really impressed how well the facilities department has taken these buildings. It's very hard to get that Energy Star rating. Company I work for gets it every year too. But there's a lot of work that goes into that, and there's a lot of cost savings that comes out of that. And like I said, I think after looking at different areas, one you didn't mention was the cafeterias. Cafeterias have gone from the district having to put $160,000 a year in to the cafeterias to actually running them in a black now. And it's all about getting the right people in there to know how to kind of look at from now is the compensation side of it. And that's one area that I think there is a lot of improvement to go into. Some of the ideas I'm looking, or I'm thinking of, is health insurance. To looking at, coming up with a plan that, everybody may have to pay a little more out of pocket. If there's not a company around that's not doing that. Dental plan, what about going to 50-50? That's where I'm at on mine. What about going to vision plan of 60-40? It's just, those are my ideas. If you want to hear them, that's what I'm looking at from my side of things.
Sure.
I'm talking, I've got four kids to take care of. So when my insurance goes up, that's a lot more out of my pocket. But, and my increase in rates or my salary doesn't increase as much as what I've seen in the school district does. Now, granted, I'm a private sector, okay? But I can get the best evaluation in the world and not make the kind of step increase that you guys make. And that kind of bothers me. And from being a taxpayer and knowing that, you got four kids coming out of my house, and you're only making $200 at my house, or, well, actually more than that, because the value's higher. It really makes me stop and think about, okay, how can we, as a community, support the school system better? And how can you, as teachers and a school board, work together to help the community out also? It goes hand in hand. We're going to have to do something here. And there's a lot of good ideas out there, and I'm throwing a few of mine out that way, so.
Much appreciated.
I know how I feel about it. I'm sure there's other people out there that feel the same.
So how often do they get raised? Is it set every year? Is that in the contract?
What's that?
The teachers. Do they get a yearly raise?
They call it a step schedule. So depending on, they don't get it every year. You guys, there's certain steps that they'll get from zero to, however many, 19. You'll get about a 3% increase, I think, is what the average is, three, somewhere in there. Two, whatever it is, but you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea goes back long before I was ever here, but the point was to get people in at a lower rate and then move them up a little quicker to over a long period of time, so you don't have to pay them that initial higher rate to start with, and it moves them through that. And then once you hit that step 19, then you don't get another step until 24, 27,
something
like that. Step a year. Step a year.
Yeah, it depends on. Yeah, you might.
Are you sure you're not talking about our classified schedule?
No, I'm
she's
just
giving
an example.
Oh.
I'm not saying that.
Oh, okay.
I'm just giving an example so she understands that it's not every single year that you get an increase. You don't.
But your point is good also that in education, for the same level of investment in your education, the amount of money that those teachers have paid to get to their master's degree when they start their first year, your starting salary is less than in other areas with that same level of education. Within 5 years of college with a master's degree, where you start in education,
career outside of education, people with that same level of education can hear generally teachers start at a lower level. And that was the thought process when it was originated, to start at the lower level, and then those step increases come with experience when the district sees, you know, what kind of investment. Also, to maintain your license, you continue to put money back into your education and you take classes throughout the process. So it does start lower than someone at the same education level who has invested the same amount of money to get to that level of qualification. So that's the point, that that's kind of where that system came from, where it started.
Yes, sir?
What's the starting salary of a teacher?
For a bachelor's level? 33,130, I believe, is what it is. 33,130. I think I looked at our schedule today. I think that's what it was.
Okay, so why they top out
it? Depends on what. Well, hold on. I'll try. I got the schedule sitting right here.
You might have that schedule. I haven't seen it.
I have, right.
Our average salaries are about $52,000. Is our average.
Okay. Starting out 33.
I'm sorry, 33,211 is step zero for the bachelor's.
Okay.
And then
top bachelor.
Top bachelor's is 62,832 after 27 years. And there's a break in there at 19. So between 19 and 27, you're flat. Right? I'd ask you what you top out, but that'd be kind of rude, wouldn't it?
I'll share.
No, sorry. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. no, those are all mine. So, all right. So, was there any other anybody else like to share any particular ideas? Any of our other finance committee members? Anybody at all? All right. So, I guess then to summarize. Unless there was any other discussion, I mean, I think the point of it was to talk, you know, basically on how to rework that salary schedule.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know,
kind of hard to do that. It's going away.
But salary schedule is going away. But there's something that's going to take its place.
And we have to be ahead of it.
I'd like to be ahead of it. Yes, very much so. I mean, I don't know. Are you? Are you familiar with any other districts around that do perform? I know Cincinnati does. It has done it for, I don't know, 15 years. I mean, I don't know how well that works for them, but I know. I mean, no one's familiar at all with any kind of.
But as Larry was saying, there's a lot that's going to have to go into it because of the differences in staffing.
Sure.
You've got people in special ed. Who, you know, their kids are doing eeny, meeny, miny, moe to answer the test, you know, and literally, I'm not joking.
And
what that means is that sometimes, no matter what the teacher does, the performance isn't going to be there. We can't take the test for them. And then there are people who, you know, don't have students. There are people who have sometimes a classroom. This teacher is great. I'm going to give this teacher all the special ed kids. Well, that teacher's performance of those special ed kids isn't necessarily going to be there. And then you also have, you know, the guidance counselors and the different people that you're going to have to find.
Right. Let me just say this, because I've asked a lot of those same questions when I think about it, and I would put it to you that is the challenge that we're going to have.
Right.
That is not a reason to not do it.
That is a challenge for us because we're
going to get there at some point, and you're absolutely right.
That's what I said earlier.
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about here is doable.
Absolutely.
There are challenges, and one of the challenges too is the teacher salary schedule has been in place now for what
80
years.
Or 80, yeah. That's a culture.
I mean, you're breaking. You know, you're going away from something that is been there.
It's generational.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I get it.
I mean, you have to really think it through, but I, again, I think as a staff, I think we can get there. I actually see that as kind of a bigger, an easier issue than this one.
I understand. I guess my worry is that we're going to try to get here before everything's in place, and then it's going to be a resource waste we're trying to figure out that we. You know what I mean? I just want to make sure that we have it. That there's enough time for us to plan and
Jeff, I think we're kind of ahead of that.
Okay.
All right. Well, you don't think we
no,
are?
No, no. I think we're well on our way. That we have the race to the top is going to feed into a lot of what we're doing. I'm just saying I want to make sure that when we get there, we don't have to go back and rework it again.
Well, that depends on the state government and their definitions. Because right now, I have no idea what their definitions are. I know what ours could be. But I don't know what they're doing. And theirs changes by the day.
I know. I get the emails too.
Yeah.
We're having our little mini
work. Yeah,
session.
Did you want to?
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
Yeah, you know, I guess maybe I missed this, but that's kind of right.
That's all right.
You know, I guess the point is then whatever we end up with, how do we sustain that, whether it be through revenue or expenses, and I think, you know,
it's a combination.
That's
you know, and I think you have to look at knowing our community now, you know, and the tax base that we did have, don't have now, and are there other ways that we need to be looking at?
I mean, do you have any thoughts of your own on how to do that?
Not until. I know whether we're going to keep retain any of our tangible property or not.
I was the only one dumb enough to throw my ideas out.
What?
I'll throw my ideas out.
For sustaining?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think you have to hold your costs down as much as you can. You know, that's the... But I think we've done that pretty well. The issue we have is we're a public school district, and whoever arrives at your doorstep, you educate.
Right.
And I'm not always sure how much that's whoever walks in, what that's going to cost. You know, those are our challenges. You know, if every kid walked in and was able to do all the work, and we didn't have to provide a lot of extra individuals for that kid, that's one thing. But knowing the percent of kids that we have that we have to serve with challenges, some of those kids are pretty costly. And it can never predict who those are and what their needs are. You know, we've gained, what, 100 kids, 111 kids so far this year? I would have never, ever, ever predicted that. Not in a while, straight. But that's where we are. And some of those kids have been very expensive. I guess if we really want to sustain our costs, then we need to put some gates up on the district and don't let anybody in. That would be one idea.
Or we just be a charter school.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea either. And then get $5,600 there for every kid. That would work for me. I think we could become a charter district and fund ourselves differently and have fewer rules. That would be a great idea. Matter of fact, that needs to be something we need to look at, actually. How to become a charter district.
I know that
funding is a lot better.
Well, and again, we can't keep our. We have to work with those folks in order for us to keep those compensation costs. I mean, it's got to be a.
And
I think everybody recognizes when the money that we have to spend on our revenues. I mean,
the levy cycle is until Ohio does something with House Bill 920, we're on a levy cycle.
I don't understand.
We are, and that I wish we weren't, but we are, because that locks your property values in at a tax rate. And it's hard to explain to folks, but that's the way it works.
Yeah. Well, Was there anything else we wanted to get accomplished tonight other than that?
What are our next steps for all of this?
Well, I think we're going to have to, you know, if we want to talk about our current, we want to talk about work on our current salary schedule, we're going to have to do that, I think. We're going to have to do an opener. I mean, I don't know how else to do it.
Is it even worth doing that, though? I mean, outside of their, I understand if we're talking about our short-term.
Yeah, our short-term. Yeah, that's what I mean. If you want to talk about our short-term, we're going to have to do, I don't know how else we're going to do it without an opener.
Right. But I'm talking about in terms of this getting ahead of.
When it goes into effect.
What's that? Yeah.
We're going to have to kind of wait. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, they're going to vote on it through the House on Thursday, so
right.
It's going to be kind of a wait and see.
What the Senate does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the Senate's going to add to it.
Right.
You know, they may strip all that out. I mean, I don't know. They may add their own stuff to it. So at this point, we're going to have to. It's going to have to wait till we're a little closer to July. I don't know what else.
No, I'm certainly not anxious to have another meeting like this. But.
Okay. All right. Other than that, we can certainly do. We can talk about sure. There are short-term issues if that is something that the board has the stomach to want to talk about. Then we can certainly do that.
We don't even have finances until July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that.
So I think our next step would just have to be wait and see what falls on our feet. I don't know. All right.
Fine.
All right. Mr. Fraker, do you have anything to add to this?
No.
All right. Anybody else want to address the board before we go? Yes, sir. Can you just speak up just a little bit? I'm sorry.
As you go forward with this task and being personally involved with many revenue campaigns, I would encourage just to kind of play it all in the same team now for the benefit of the school district, that there be a paramount amount of communication so nobody is left in the dark, whether the decision is for or against whatever's done, that the population of this district is educated properly. Because there are too many things sometimes that people are making decisions because they hear, well, we don't want to raise taxes, and they might not understand it, why we have to do it in the short term to get to the long term results. I'm totally in agreement that it's not the side of expenditures that's the problem, it's the side of funding that's the problem. And unfortunately, in the short term, you can only control the expenditure part because we as a state accept what happens in the fund department right now. We don't do enough to try to change that as citizens. So if you have to make a decision because you need to put a levy on, I would expect very clear communication as to why you're doing it, how to do it, who they can ask questions to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because I think in past years, we have not done a good job of that. And there are too many unanswered questions. And, you know, we have the ability to through email, we have the ability to communicate through websites, the newspaper, or whatever those resources are, flyers, but we should really take that opportunity to make sure our citizens are very well informed to the best of the ability of the board to do that.
Excellent point. All right. Was there anybody else? Okay. Yes.
We didn't arrive at the idea that our only solution is a levy, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not saying that. I'm saying
you said we were in agreement.
But
whether it's that or something else,
right?
You need to make sure you communicate why you're doing it, the reasons, the need, positive, negative, all sides of it.
Yeah, I agree.
That's
communication.
That's all.
Yeah.
You just don't do a good job of that.
Right. No, I appreciate that.
But I would say we at least have a relative understanding that our revenue does play some part into this particular issue.
Expenses.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, given how we're funded.
Right, but if we're going to have that discussion, we got to also then we do have to consider talking about the impact of that kind of stuff on the private sector.
Sure.
Because
they pay for it.
Yes.
Yeah, I get it.
And, yeah.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, then I'll move that we adjourn.
All right.
Second.
I did. Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Franklin.
Yes.
Mr. Lassen.
Yes.
Okay, we are adjourned.
No, I won't.